It is time for another edition of Silence Broken, the IPV Talks, where Aaron Lee and myself, Bob Perot, do our best to keep the issue of intimate partner violence in the forefront in the communication. Of course, Aaron Lee, Executive Director of Lanark County Interval House. Always a pleasure to see you, my friend.
Always happy to be here.
We're joined today by someone we both know. And when I first came to then Lake 88, this is one of the first people that I met in his former role. Now, of course, he is a counselor with the town of Perth. And I must also add that at one point, he was for MyFM, our exclusive royal correspondent.
Yes.
Dave Bird, welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much. Glad to be back and glad to contribute to this if I can.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, Aaron, we want to make sure that people understand that Dave is speaking from his own experience. He is not officially representing the town of Perth right here. He is a councillor and he is a former OPP officer, and he is not representing the OPP. But, Aaron, you've known Dave for quite a while as well.
I have had the pleasure of knowing David Byrd for a very long time. I have a very respectful feeling, I think, between both of us in terms of our formal work and being members of the community. Dave, I'm wondering if just in terms of your own experience, when you reflect back, how do you think things have changed, both in the from the municipal politics kind of foray, also in policing? How do you think things have changed over the years as it relates to IPV and the discussions?
Drastically for the better. My policing experience on both sides of the pond covers four decades. When I joined the Met Police in 1981, the terminology generally was still in those days wife beater or spousal assault. And it was, if I can just do this briefly, a flash forward through those 40 years.
Please.
One of the techniques we had to use then, because the legal system required that a victim make a statement and testify, we knew even then, before the cycle of violence was clearly articulated, or that, and I learned this from older police officers, that we would use the common law power of breach of the peace, because the victim, by nature of the nature of the cycle and the offence, would withdraw their statement at some point. And this is where it was, and this is the truth of it, we would hope that the guy would get wound up enough to have a go at us so that we could lift him for the night or a couple more days. That situation changed in the UK. I came over here and it was slightly different, but not totally unsimilar to the mechanisms that were in place. We always suspected in policing that it was underreported as an offence. I still think perhaps today it is. No matter what we put in place, it's the nature of the beast. In 1996, I was one of three officers from the town police that went to get training in the new Attorney General's guidelines, which replaced the onus on the victim in domestic violence alone to or it didn't hinge any lot more on them having a statement or being willing to testify. The Crown almost became the victim in that case and stood up for them in that case, which I think was a marked step forward. Also, they started having, as a result of that, and it morphed over the years, Crowns devoted to domestic violence cases, and I'm using the old term because that's what it was then, and domestic violence courts specific to that started, and I'm sure the justices of the peace, the magistrates, and also specific judges had received training, because that was the time that the cycle of violence was also articulated clearly for the first time. And Aaron, I don't know if it's still the model, because I've been out of the loop for a couple of years now. But to me, it always made sense, especially the tightening of the timeline, how it got tighter, tighter, how the cycle would go. So that's where I am. And I hate to admit it, but I have seen the whole range, and I know there have been occasions when I've seen how what the ultimate cost can be of this. And I did pick up on one of the terms that was used a lot. I don't know if it's used anymore, was you had to start looking at it as homicide prevention. So night and day to when I joined, they changed the terminology now. There are recommendations coming out of the inquiries that have happened. And Bob will remember this. I used to say quite often, if it's a community problem, then it needs the community to respond, and the police can only deal with what they know about. And that is very true, particularly true of intimate partner violence.
Yeah,
It's right
I would
across
agree.
society. It's not just what you think of the drunk and out of work person. I've dealt with, and I'll say this in from the UK, I've dealt with lawyers and charged them.
I think
So.
that's so important to point out, Dave, is that it isn't just one particular walk of life, and in that incredible synopsis that you just gave us there. You really shed light on, we know this isn't a problem just in Canada. We know from what we hear in the States, but hearing that the same thing and you saying that, you see the same signs from the UK to Canada. I mean, we can only work in our community, like you said, but obviously this is a global issue. We know that, and we know that there are global efforts to stop.
It's a human condition and societal ill. Having said that, and Aaron, forgive me here if I'm out of step. I personally don't like the t term when it was bandied around of it being an epidemic, because I think that's a misnomer, and it almost gives the impression that if scientists came up with an antidote, we'd all be fine. We'd all be inoculated at school. It's not that. It's people that need to exert control on someone else that they are in an intimate relationship with.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we probably would agree to disagree just in terms of the term epidemic, where we're not necessarily looking at it from a medical perspective, but looking at the mass numbers, the mass reach, and the impact on communities, regardless of the socioeconomic realities of folks. It was the single most important, or the only recommendation that was made solely from the jury, and the jury being made up of community members. And I really want to capitalize, Dave, on your point about it being a community issue, and that, the policing and social services and anti-violence advocates, we can only do what it is that we know. And since the inquest, I would say the community has been front and center. The community has been active and actioning items and showing up to demand that things are different, attending community-based events to have a say and to talk about what do I do as a neighbor who lives in Elmont or Perth or Smiths Falls? What do I do when I see something in my community? So I would agree with you that it's really about us all working a little bit more united in our relationships, right? And sharing information a bit more openly, for the greater good of people in terms of safety.
I apologize. I should have said that I have difficulty with the term, because I wonder if some other people might misinterpret what that is trying to say. But no, and I understand what you're saying. It I could come back to the fact that the legal system can only deal with what it's aware of. And Bob's heard of this before in my previous role. How do you give people the strength or the understanding that that little part of your brain, that instinct that says something is wrong, to run with it and step forward on it? It's usually that part of your brain that's telling you that's not right, that what's going on in that situation, or my best friend is no longer doing the things they used to do. They're not communicating anymore. That kind of thought pattern. Be
I think part of that is, and we talk about how, we don't want this just to be about news stories and so on that come up, but they when things come up, we do talk about it. We have to talk about it, like the terrible situation in Cornwall and so on. That is another way that it gets kept in the conversation. We're seeing more releases from police, Smiths Falls, OPP, and so on. That mentioned IPV, which tells us a couple of things, that there are more people who are coming forward, but also the message that as the media, one of the main reasons why we report those stories and put them out there is so that people who are living in similar situations will say, that victim did it. Maybe I can. And that's part of the messaging that's sort of underlying, but still, very important as we continue on with these conversations, Aaron.
No,
Yeah.
absolutely.
I would say just recently, I was doing a keynote speak in Ottawa, and it actually came up from an audience member who said, "How come we're hearing about like these incidents of violence in Lanark County?" And I said, "When we think about the fact that we've seen a reduction in the number of femicides, but we're seeing an increase in calls for service, we have to figure out how to shift the way we think about it and see that as a good problem to have. We're having less murders and more calls, which means more people are having that thought process, Dave, that you're talking about, right? Something's not right. I need to action it. And the community is talking about it. Media is talking about it. So then somebody makes a call for service. So I think it's a good problem to have. And I think that it's effective because I think that other communities are now asking the question, why are we hearing about this more often from Lanark County? And I said also, Smiths Falls police are very overt about things that are happening. And it's about being transparent. It's about working as a community so that not only people who are enduring hear that validation, but also other people who maybe take positions of disbelief or it's not my problem until it's my problem can hear that this is a problem in their very own community. And I'm sure that must impact you as a local politician and as a municipal council member. It must impact you when you hear these trends and you hear about things happening in your own community. Do you see that as something different? That municipalities are now talking more about intimate partner violence than before?
I think they are. I would suggest perhaps the struggle is the old one of what can we usefully do? How can we have an impact? We could have delegations come. We can make official statements on appropriate days, but I think sometimes some of us wonder, what more could we do? And that's we are responsible for the community. We're the custodians of the community, as it were, I think. And that's always the struggle. What could we usefully do that is not just I was going to say waving the flag about it, but the wrong term, but you know what I mean. It's what can we do? How can we have an impact? And the impacts, as you've said, are often difficult to assess. It's the old story in policing. You can't measure prevention.
And you have that, like you mentioned, a presentation. If Aaron comes in and does a presentation, it's about, that's information for the town council, right? We know, and I know as a reporter, that There's many people who don't follow town council. They wait to hear the briefs and so on that come out of it. So when those presentations come in, you're exactly right, Dave. You, as a council, has to say, what are we going to do with this information? To your one of your first points, to remove the underreporting, because that's a scary thing. It's always going to be unreported because there's always people who are living in absolute fear. Regardless. So council has to be able to find a way to use this information to, like you said, address this community problem. Does that make sense, Aaron?
Yeah, I think that, one of the primary examples I could give you is the fact that Lanark County Council was the first municipality to make the declaration of recommendation number one from the juries in from the inquest. And that has led to huge impact within 106 other communities following suit. So I think that there are big picture solutions, and I think that there are local solutions, like when you have municipal councillors show up at community-based events, whether that's December 6th or Take Back the Night or something else that's going on, and you have municipal council members part of that. When you think about your community safety and well-being plan and how that already includes intimate partner violence, and what is our municipality doing with our community safety and well-being plan, and you are mobilizing it. It is being mobilized. So what is Perth Council doing to participate and to inform that is very, very important, because then we can give that to the public in terms of what's happening with the community safety and well-being plan. I think endorsing campaigns like See It, Name It, Change It, and talking about and giving those kinds of messages in our community coming from leadership are really important. And I would say that I know that I feel like if I need an ally from Perth, I know I can call Dave Bird and say, here's what's concerning to the community. How is it we can work together on solutions? And that's the other piece is I find that municipal councils are more open to thinking about creative solutions that are outside of what we did historically, because we know what we did historically didn't work. And most everybody who's a council member also either knows somebody, has a family member, a friend who has endured violence, who has survived violence, or who maybe was taken at the hands of violence. So we all have, as you said earlier, we all have a part to play as community members. And I do think that we can't underestimate the influence and the impact that councils can have in moving things forward, challenging at AEMO and ROMA and various tables where, you're bringing up the issue from, this small rural community, and other people are listening, and I think that that's really, really quite important to continue to do.
I take that on board. I find that really useful. I do have a question for you, Erin. I suspected in my time, and of course, I have to be careful now because I'm dating myself a bit here, but I always felt in relation to domestic violence that Crime Stoppers, the anonymous reporting of something, was underutilized in cases of domestic violence. I always wondered, this hesitance to report, or not just the victim themselves, but third parties that suspect, to actually call the police and then have to feel perhaps that they have to justify what they're saying, whereas it's an anonymous call to Crime Stoppers. Do you think we promote that enough?
No, I don't think we promote it enough. I do think that, again, with creative responses, we have a good working relationship with Crime Stoppers. We are planning on working on a number of initiatives together, including the Purple Bench Project. And just recently, Crime Stoppers approached our As Good As News store to see if they could put some information in the As Good As News store so that the community can have access to it. So I agree with you. There are things that have been underutilized, and as we break down silos, it's really good to nurture those relationships and to figure out how we can work together. And Crime Stoppers is a good example, and Neighbors, Friends, and Family is a good example. I think that funding is always at risk for larger initiatives like Neighbors, Friends, and Family, but they now have a whole rural component neighbors and friends and family that our rural community informed in terms of making sure information gets out to people who live in rural communities, that safety planning is not the same as it is in urban centers. Safety planning and escape planning is different in rural communities. So I agree with you that Crime Stoppers and others are really good examples of ways we can collaborate and be creative together, and that we have to use the resources that we have.
I think it's
I'm
great
very,
that there's,
sorry, I
sorry,
cut you off.
that's okay. I was just going to say, I think it's great that we have so many different options, you know, that there's different ways that people, that victims can reach out and look for help, you know? And it's kind of like with any thing that you're trying to promote, there's so many different avenues and you just need to figure out which ones hit. You know, you're not looking for one answer. You're looking for a way to make sure that people know that they have all these different avenues. Maybe one works best for someone in one situation. Maybe that won't work for someone in another situation. It really, like the cases, has to be tailored to the individual.
That's a very good point, Bob, and it's also sort of links to the thought pattern that Erin was expressing there, is that I think we have to acknowledge more right across the board that this is a vast country, it's a huge province, and there are cultural differences, and there is no set cure-all or cookie cutter model that you can put in place for both cities and rural communities. It's a different environment. It's far more easy to be isolated in a rural community. And for just one example, but I was, Aaron, you prompted me to think of, as I probably always do, Sherlock Holmes' story when he and Watson are on a train going through the countryside. And Watson's remarking how beautiful and bucolic and quiet the countryside compared to London. And Sherlock Holmes says to him, no. He said, even in the darkest alleyways in London, there are eyes and ears. So out in the country, things go unnoticed and unseen. And I think that remains true to a certain degree. We have different issues here. We are rural communities. It's the same intimate partner violence, but the mechanisms of how they go unreported and how people get away with it are different in rural communities.
100%. I think the nuances of violence in rural communities is it needs to be ongoingly centralized in any solution that you're talking about. We can't take a solution that gets used in the city and translate that solution to a rural community. I would agree with you. Isolation, think about internet and cell service, right? In terms of the realities, you can't just hit a button and it's going to work. Like it does in the city, it's not going to work. A call for service is not going to happen in 3.5 minutes if you're in Flower Station, or depending on where our constables are and our cars are, it could take longer. So I think that you're right that the nuances of what happens in rural communities and that silence is something that we really work hard to break using this forum and this platform. Wouldn't you agree, Bob?
Absolutely. And, you know, really, it goes back to lines of communication. And, you know, one thing isn't going to work for another person, right? And when we're talking about the vastness of some of these areas, and Aaron and I have discussed this, you know, many times before, Dave, you're really hitting it on the head because these things are happening. And it's sort of like, if a tree falls in the forest and no one is there to hear it, doesn't make a sound. You know, if a victim's crying out for help and there's no one around, you know, when I say crying out, that can be any other way. So getting those communications mended, really, I mean, that's just one of many things that needs to change and has started to change as well. We've noted that too in the past, Aaron. Now we're just about out of time, Dave. So I'm wondering if you have anything else that you wanted to sort of offer to the conversation before we turn it over to Aaron.
No, I'm just happy that I had a chance to say this, and that I am happy that I am retired and I have a f more freedom to speak from my life experience than structured, as it were, if you follow my drift on that.
Absolutely, and that's exactly why we were really looking forward to having you as a guest. We appreciate it, and you know, your honesty is very important. You have experience that I certainly don't have, and different experience than Aaron as well.
Yeah, and I would say for today to our listeners that it doesn't matter where you work, it doesn't matter who your employees or your neighbors and your friends are, that it is important to listen and heed advice with the wisdom of David Byrd and others to think about how you can be part of the solution and how victims can find their courage to reach out and to be engaged in how we will continue to amplify those realities in our community on this platform and others as we navigate to create safer communities.
And those would be Aaron Lee's final thoughts as we end each program with that. Aaron, as always, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. Dave Byrd, thank you so much for doing this. What a fascinating conversation.
Thank you.
Aaron, I know you agree.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you
And
so much,
good
David.
luck in your endeavors.
Thank you very much. Now, don't forget, you can listen to past episodes of Silence Broken, the IPV Talks. All you need to do is go to lanarkleadstoday.ca/silencebroken, and you will have all the past episodes there. And we update it every Friday. So yeah, we'll have this one up there. Well, if you're listening to it on the website, it's already there, but look for another episode next week, Friday. For Aaron Lee, I'm Bob Perot. Thanks so much for listening. lanarkleadstoday.ca.